Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Ben Kay, and this is the Rugby Tonight podcast. I'm joined by Hugo Monye for a look ahead to the final round of Aviva Premiership action before we all head off to the continent for our European adventures. Got loads to get stuck into on the pod today, but here's a sneak peek of what else is coming up. Danny Cipriani was our star guest for the live studio show with Bafes.
Well, when I was at fullback, Sean gave me two pieces of advice, and it was either pass early or run hard, and it was pretty simple, but, you know, at fullback, those are the type of things you have to do, and you know, to keep my head nice and straight and square. And, you know, that was what I got from him at that time.
And I caught up with my mate, Danny Care, for a bit of daddy daycare. Did you get it?
Kind of weren't really aware at the time of his first try, but then afterwards someone said, oh, you know, that's the first try in European Champions Cup history. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I think I was offside, to be honest. I got away with it.
So obviously the big news this week is Carl Sinclair getting banned for 7 weeks would be hugely disappointing, not just to him, but for England and Harlequins. What's your reaction to the news?
It's different. I've seen the clip and, you know, Kyle has admitted that he has made contact with Patterson's face. So, you know, we know that's the truth. We can see it on the video. What I haven't liked about it is the fact that all the media outlets, everyone seems to say, well, he's been done for gouging. He's admitted he's gouged. He hasn't done that. He's admitted the charge that he was cited for, which is illegal contact with the eye or the eye area. Now, that is a difference because there's an element of intent on there. So at risk of doing the same thing and trying to put words into his mouth, we've all been in situations where people are trying to annoy you and he definitely pulls the head guard off first. He probably leaves his hand in there, gives them a rough. I don't think he's intentionally trying to injure and stick his eye in. And I don't like the word gouging because it's a bit like the word stabbing. You either do it or you don't and you're trying to put your hand right in. I don't think he has done that.
No, because gouging is sticking your finger in someone's eye socket and trying to rip your eyeball out, which he clearly doesn't do. I know Kyle, and I know he's definitely got a media perception of being this hothead, and at times he is. He really is. And I guess in that incident, he's trying to instigate a reaction from Mike Patterson. I guess what probably lets him down is a little bit of history, because it was only 2 weeks ago where Joe Marler's doing this to James Haskell, and he got a retrospective yellow card. So we've seen incidents, we've done enough games where we've seen second rows putting their arms through mauls, trying to just find something to get hold of, but I guess they're trying to affect the ball. So I guess in many ways you can understand their frustration where they get a yellow or red for getting an accidental finger in the eye or something like that. With Carl, he's not trying to affect the ball.
No.
He's just trying to upset the player. It is disappointing for him that his hands have gone from the head guard area into the eye area.
Yeah.
And I think 7 weeks, I think it's fair enough. I think it's fair enough.
I think it's spot on. I'm not trying to condone what he's done at all. And I'm not trying to say that he's not been very silly. It's a bit, you know, it's one of those things where you go, oh, 7 weeks, you know, what's that? Well, actually, when you're Harlequins and you're running out of players, you can't pull a fly half into play tight head like you can pull a fly half into play centre or fullback.
Yeah.
They are very limited resources. That is going to hurt Harlequins massively. Now, had it been a deliberate act, yes, we should be starting at 12 weeks. And by deliberate, I mean deliberately trying to injure the bloke. He's been really silly there, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's cost his team massively by trying to annoy someone.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he'll learn a lesson from that because he's going to have to walk around the training ground feeling like he's let his teammates down.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be his big frustration. I spoke to him. In fact, we covered the game. It was the same week where he got dropped from the England training squad. And I just said to Carl, in fact, it was before Leicester game. So, Carl, when you get on the pitch, keep your head, mate. Just keep everything that you do positive. So, Ed will be monitoring him closer than he would normally have done to see how he responds and reacts. This is clearly not going to help his cause. Carl is a guy that is in love with rugby. That's all he lives for. He goes home, he watches YouTube clips of the best players, analyses training. In fact, he coached a rugby team on Tuesday and Thursday. He loves the game. So for him to have had a Saturday 3 p.m. taken away from him for the next 7 weeks will frustrate the life out of him, especially in a team which, hey, they're not top of the league. They're not winning lots of games. They're not flying high. They've got loads of injuries. He has to burden all that frustration of not just his teammates, but all the internal frustration which he has. And he's now just got to focus all of that energy into something positive and be back even better for when he returns.
I do think we need to stamp this out of the game. Excuse pun for foul play. But we do need to stamp it out of the game. But it is different to actually trying to punish someone for trying to injure someone and going, look, this isn't acceptable. If you touch the eye area, you're likely to get a 7-week ban, whether you're meaning to hurt someone or not. I think it's about right. The one person I do maybe feel slightly for is Chris Ashton, because he might be sitting at home going, well, hang on, what's so different to what I did? I wasn't trying to injure a bloke either. So we'll see how that pans out. But certainly with Harlequin's injury list, that's a big blow for them. And then the other slightly more light-hearted, though... Actually, should we be saying light-hearted? Man gets mauled by a lion. But Scott Baldwin, the most ridiculous thing his coach Steve Tandy has ever heard one of his players doing. What was he thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Scott Baldwin's ever perhaps watched a David Attenborough documentary, seen what lions do. They are called the king of the jungle for a pretty decent reason. They're ferocious animals. They can weigh up to 300 kgs. And he's petting it like he would, you know, Molly the cat at home. It's unbelievable. I remember we went to a lion sanctuary when we went on tour in a little while ago, South Africa. And I was so scared to get in a cage of this thing, let alone start whacking it around his mouth. He just offered his hand to this lion.
It's when the lion starts looking up. The lion almost can't believe it.
Yeah.
Lunch has come. Excellent.
It's unreal.
But absolutely one of the strangest things I have... I can't believe it. I loved the way that his coach started trying to sort of say, well, it wasn't the lion's fault.
Yeah, too right. And the lads, you can hear on the VT on the cameras, like, did you record it? Let's get to Peter.
Two things about that. Your mate's just had his hand bitten by a lion and you're thinking whether you'll get 250 quid. And the other thing, it's just been proven that the Welsh TV is so far behind, they've still got Jeremy Beadle presenting.
Didn't even think about that. But I guess we are laughing because he's actually fine.
What's the weirdest injury that any of your teammates or you've ever had that's kept you out?
Oh, geez, certainly nothing that would compete with that. I remember going around to a pal's house. He had a newborn baby and I picked up his baby. We had a real tough training session. I picked up the baby and I tore my hamstring 8 centimetres just by picking up this baby. So I must have been really tired and whatnot. But yeah, ringing the coach. I remember another time, Hal Luscombe. So as backs do, you can imagine on a Tuesday, you guys are doing mauling all the rest of it. And just before we go into training, we're practicing how far we can do drop goals on. Hal Luscombe, ex-Wales centre, Harlequins, is practicing a drop goal from 60 metres and he's pulled his hamstring, like really bad. Obviously, can't tell the coach he's done it by doing a drop goal. So we had to wait till we got into training and he's gone down with a sniper as we're practicing rucking practice. He was out for 12 weeks, tore his hamstring off the bone. Poor lad.
I didn't miss a game because I wasn't allowed to and I was too embarrassed, but I was a couple of days before a game doing a bit of DIY and had the old Stanley knife out trying to cut a bit of that electrical tubing that you put the wires in outside and slipped and put a few stitches in. I had to have a few stitches, so I had to race around to the doctor to get him to stitch me up. But I didn't need my hands much. So they weren't much use anyway, so that was okay. But the worst one was Premiership final. The Thursday before, we're obviously all G'd up, and Daryl Gibson decides he was going to finish off putting the paving stones on his patio, drops one of them on his feet, tries to go out and warm up, and obviously it was no good, so he missed the Premiership final because he'd dropped a paving slab on his foot the week of the Premiership final.
Pay someone to do it.
Right, injured Wasps fly half Danny Cipriani put his time off to good use by joining Ugo, Baves and I in the studio for a live interview. Here's the best bits from our chat.
Danny, brilliant to have you here. Fantastic. Quite clearly incapacitated at the moment. Just give us an update on how the knee's coming on.
Yeah, it's coming well. It's pretty slow the first couple of weeks of rehab, especially with a knee injury, but, you know, slowly get into it now and things start to build nicely, and I've got the faith in the Wasps medical team.
Great stuff. We're absolutely thrilled that you're here. Now, of course, we are live on Facebook and Twitter, so if you do have any questions for Danny, then please send them through. Ugo, you're in charge of this. What have we got?
That's it, as you can imagine, with a great man in today. We've had plenty of questions in, so we're going to get through them here. The first one's from Jacob Basford. Who's the best fly half you've played against and why, Danny?
I've been very fortunate to play against a lot of great fly halves. Probably have to say Dan Carter. Obviously, his, you know, what he's done over his career is unheralded, and I think he's moved to France, and even though he's a bit older now, his experience is coming through, and obviously he's probably the best 10 I've played against.
I've got a question. When you first broke into the Wasps side, but a long time ago now, did you always see yourself as a 10 playing fullback because that was where they were positioning you, or did you think that actually I might end up at fullback for the rest of my career?
No, 10 was always the goal, but Sean Edwards at the time, we had Alex King, who was a very experienced 10, who was the ultimate game manager. And, you know, he said to me, because I've got the pace and the youth on my side from fullback, I can sit back and watch what he does and how he manages the game, and the things that I could learn from him, you know, really helped me throughout my whole career. So it was a great opportunity for me to spend a season at fullback and really learn from him. And then the following season, I moved to 10 and just been there ever since.
And that youth thing is the key thing, isn't it? When you look at those images we just saw, winning a European title in 2008, so coming up for 10 years ago, I think people forget how young you were when you started. Do you sometimes have to pinch yourself and think, I've been in this game a long time now?
Yeah, it does creep up on you. You know, being 29 now and my 30th birthday is coming up soon. I think with age, the experience of playing rugby, you know, I'm enjoying my rugby even more now because I've got an even more important role as a fly half. I guess I'm becoming that Alex King type fly half, as you are. You try and manage, you try and mentor the younger players, try and bring through a squad, and I'm really enjoying that challenge at the minute.
Well, you said you've been in the game a long time and you'd have had lots of decent advice. So, from @Thompson1402989893, they don't make it easy. Real catchy. Yeah. What's the best bit of advice you've been given?
Well, when I was at fullback, Sean gave me two pieces of advice, and it was either pass early or run hard, and it was a pretty simple, but, you know, at fullback, those are the type of things you have to do and you know, to keep my head nice and straight and square. And, you know, that was what I got from him at that time.
We've done all right off the back of it. Got another really good one from @Mark58N. Don't know where these are coming from, but what's the most outrageous piece of skill that you've executed on a rugby pitch?
I don't know, really, because I guess it's just part and parcel of the game. There's nothing too outrageous. It's more probably in the warm-up. I like to mess about a bit with the ball and get my eye in and do a few kick-ups and things like that, and I guess that's a...
Is that you just showboating, or is that you actually trying to just get to relax, a feel for the ball?
I think before in the warm-up, when the cameras aren't on you, everything's not going, you know, just to relax. You go out there, people have got different routines, different things, and I like to practice my first touch when I'm kicking with Jimmy at the beginning of the game.
Well, that length of the trail field try, was it Northampton at Franklin's Gardens last year? Yeah. When you ended up giving it to Jimmy Goffers, didn't you? You made that chip, but it's from your own line. Was there any moment where you've gone, this better come off, or the forwards are going to give me a hell of a kicking here? Or did you just know that the space was there and you might as well go from anywhere on the pitch?
I think when you make those decisions, it's how you execute and the conviction you go through with it. I saw the space was there. And obviously with the defenders on the short side and the fullback being so deep, often the space is just that 10-metre period, that area just behind the defensive line. And it was either that or run at George North, so I thought that it was going to happen.
What about the different messages that you're given? Because, you know, that try that Ben's mentioning there, you're just going for it. You're playing your game. But when you look at the England managers, England coaches that have been responsible for your international career, there have been a few, and the message has changed. How difficult is it to adapt to what each man wants you to do?
I think that's a big difference when a coach does come in, because they've got their own philosophy. And it's about adapting and playing with that. You know, I was very lucky to have Brian Ashton, who coached me in the Nash Academy at 15, and he eventually gave me my England debut. So he knew me very well and how I played, and, you know, his messages were very similar to the classroom lessons that we had, you know, at 15, 16, 17 when I was younger and moving forward. And then obviously things changed slightly with the coaches coming in, and, you know, with the youth, that's what you don't really have, is that experience to keep adapting to the man management, to the coaches. And that's something, as you get older, you learn to do. And, you know, going to Steve Diamond and going to Sale and things like that is a very different character to a lot of coaches in rugby. But, you know, I've got a great relationship with him, and that was something which, you know, I developed as you get older and as everyone does as they mature.
We've got a couple more questions from Twitter, actually, and the first two kind of relate to themselves. So what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self? And I guess the second one, with Marcus Smith, he is that 18-year-old kid making his way in the Premiership, obviously started really well. What advice would you give Marcus Smith, and what would you perhaps change at 18 for yourself?
To Marcus Smith, I think he's got great role models and people to listen to in Nick Evans, Mark Mapletoft, who obviously, you know, both played a lot of rugby in the Northern and Southern Hemisphere. So I think he's got a lot of experience to lean upon. So they'll be giving him all the advice that he needs, and, you know, going out there and enjoying himself and understanding that, you know, he's got to try and, you know, build the team forward.
I know you're a lover of all sports, football being one of them. You'd rated yourself, or still rate yourself, as a footballer. Boxing's another favourite of yours. So let's go. Edward Howe, this off Facebook. Would you prefer to go up against Mayweather or McGregor? Who are you backing in that fight, by the way?
Mayweather all day. He's the greatest boxer of my generation of being around. And obviously, Conor McGregor's a fantastic fighter as well. But when it comes to, you know, the talent and the outrageous ability, Floyd Mayweather's got it.
OK, great. Another real pertinent question from Ellen Waugh of Facebook. What's your favourite flavour of crisp?
At the minute, it'd have to be Thai sweet chilli.
See, that is a sign of the times, isn't it? Thai sweet chilli.
So exotic.
You put it in a sandwich, it's lovely.
Salt and vinegar. Chris, you don't remember where you just had to pull the... You got the little sachet of salt and had to make up your own salt?
No, I wasn't born for that.
Jeez, ridiculous. Okay. Ben, fire away.
So, you went out to Australia. How was your time out there and your life experience?
Yeah, for me, it was a great life experience. It was an opportunity to go away. It was a time in my career when I just felt like I wanted to move away from England for a bit, because it just seemed a bit of a bubble and a bit too much for me. So I went away, and, you know, it was almost like a paid gap year for me, to be honest. But I learned a lot in terms of, you know, playing in a different culture. You know, I met a lot of great people along the way, and there's people, there's friends and family that I'm still very close to nowadays. So it was something I'd highly recommend. Perhaps in hindsight, I would have done one season, but, you know, I enjoyed my 2 years out there.
Great question, Ben. Rob, Ben, can I just say that was outstanding? You actually acted it out as though you just slumped against the bar, yeah, asking the question. Just Rob, fire away. You've got your question.
Hi. It's been noticed that on some games you wear a scrum cap, whereas in others you don't. I know you wore it early in your career. Is there any reason why?
Well, I started wearing it because when I was 17, I had quite a bad concussion where I had bleeding in my brain and I couldn't do anything for 5 months. And then the doctor recommended I started wearing a scrum hat. So from sort of 18 onwards, I was wearing it. Moved to Australia. My first pre-season game was against Tonga, and the heat was...
You wear a scrum cap against Tonga.
But do you know what? I took it off because the heat was like so blazing hot. It was almost unbearable, and I was trying to like focus and make calls, and it was too hot. So I ended up taking it off, got the confidence, and, you know, started playing without it. And last season I put it on because I had a mild concussion, and it was a bit cold, so it was covering my ears.
Wasps, unbelievable home record the last couple of years. Harlequins went down there a couple of weeks ago, beat them. Bath went there just at the weekend and beat them too. But it's not just their home form. Away form's not been great. They don't seem to be the table-charting team as they were last year. What do you put it down to?
It just proves, doesn't it, that you get on a roll. You get on a roll of winning and your confidence is high and everything you touch turns to gold. And then you have a break like the end of the season or something happens and suddenly just that confidence where no one can put their finger on why it's not clicking for them this year. And what's really interesting is as soon as that starts to happen, you start looking around for, well, what are the reasons? Yeah, they've got a few injuries and, you know, Dyer Young's been quite vocal this week about the fact that, well, is his squad big enough? And But last year, when things are going well, you just get on with it. And it's very, very difficult. I think, you know, that one of the problems Wasps have is their successful style of play involves things clicking. Whereas if you think about sort of maybe Exeter or Saracens, where they've been able to ride tough butts in a season before is the fact they've been able to go to that Route 1 game of Exeter, have a pick and go and just start grinding out a few victories. I can't remember saying our Wasps ground out any victories last year because they didn't need to, but that's probably the area of the game that they're thinking, well, that's, we need to now go back to, maybe we're not going to run in as many tries as we have done last year, but we need to sort of build on something. And then once we've got that winning momentum back, then we can start opening the game up again.
Momentum, massive in sport. It, you know, obviously it fosters confidence, and you're right about their attack. There's so many moving parts to it that if your confidence isn't quite there, your timing might just be off just a little bit. That tip on may not be there, or that mistake happens. Jimmy Gopoff at the weekend, a couple of real uncharacteristic errors. So I think for their attack to function, they need to be confident. But as well as that, their forward pack, that just, I don't know, for me, I think they've been overpowered. In the bad losses they've had, especially Bath and Quinns, they've been beaten up on both occasions. And that's probably the biggest concern. I also think Cipriani's a huge loss. I think he really is. He was quite vocal at the start of the season, said, you know, he'll be better this year for it. It's his second season into it. And when their attack goes really well, Danny's always at the heartbeat of it. There's not many players like him that can attack the gain line with the accuracy, with the pace, with the skill, and the passing under pressure, which he does. You take him out of it, and all of a sudden, what used to be very square and very slick, starting to look quite lateral, just because you've lost 10, 20% of pace from the starting point of an attack move. Defending against Wasps, I was under pressure straight away from 9. Once the ball got into 10's hands, I don't feel that anymore with Jimmy Gopoff. He's a great player, played a season last year, can control a game, he's a wonderful goal kicker. But with ball in hand, he's just not like Danny. And that's not a slight on him. You can say that for a lot of 10's in the Prem.
And I guess the real challenge that Danny faces is when he comes back, there'll be so much pressure on him to put it right and do some of those amazing bits of genius that we've seen him do last year when perhaps there wasn't quite as much pressure. And does he, you know, can he get that balance of not forcing it and not trying every time to try and be the guy that sparks something for them, because they need a spark from somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, they've got to put it right in the hardest situation possible, away at Saracens this weekend, and we'll obviously be covering that on BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD on Sunday from 2:30.
Ali Eakin travelled to Surrey Sports Park to speak to coach Mark Mapletoft and Jamie Roberts at Harlequin's training session, only to discover that 45% of their squad were injured and were training with London Irish as a result.
So we came down here this afternoon to talk to Harlequins. This is Surrey Sports Park. This is their home. This is where they always are on a Tuesday afternoon. But London Irish are here. This is very, very unusual. Midweek, in season, for two Premiership clubs to be training together. It just doesn't happen. Can you imagine Leicester Tigers and Northampton Saints facing up to each other on a Tuesday afternoon in the middle of the Premiership season? It just does not happen. It's happening here today out of necessity, because of numbers, a lack of numbers, injuries to players. There was an A-League game last night and London Irish had to fulfil that fixture. Harlequins, they're just beaten up generally. Mark, talk us through this afternoon, because this is unusual for two Premiership clubs to be training on a Tuesday against each other. To the best of my knowledge, it's very, very rare, if not a completely
I don't think it's unique. I think these guys have done it with Bath before. We've done it with Irish now. Maybe four or five times
this season.
Over the last 18 months, it's something we've found a lot of benefit from, actually.
But in terms of the broader context of the injury situation, John Kingston just told me that you've got in the region of 25 players unavailable right now. There are other clubs who have similar numbers: Bath, Gloucester, Wasps. They're all struggling at the moment. I mean, some of this is anecdotal, and we're trying to read into things something that we don't quite know the answer to. But in your mind, is it worse than it's ever been? The same? Better? Where are we?
I think it's the worst it's ever been, sort of statistically, for us. I think we had close to 45% unavailable for Saturday. So, I mean, you're already getting close to, I think we've got a squad of 57, but you're pretty close to you know, 27, 28 of those players being unavailable. it just puts it for me, Ali, what it does is it puts a lot more emphasis on guys having to play and back up week to week and do training sessions that perhaps aren't quite ready and are at that level. So when you throw players in to having to play matches back to back and they're not used to it, they break down. And we found that after two A-League games. And I think something somewhere along the line has to be addressed to say, look, why is it like this? I'm pretty sure it's anecdotally, it's always like this at the start of the year, but this is unprecedented. I've never experienced this.
Do you think the new laws have anything to do with it? Because we're seeing higher ball in play time,
Greater
number of rucks, greater number of collisions, therefore more injuries, more tackles having to be made. This is only over the first 5 weeks, of course, so we're basing it off a small number of statistics, but nevertheless, the trend seems to be going that way. Is that a factor in your mind?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Again, no statistics to back it up, but it's a bit like crashes on a motorway on a country road. I think you get more crashes on a country road, but more deaths on a motorway. Why? Because the cars are moving at a faster rate. It's what you have to try and somehow do is get that balance right. So therefore, your training at some stage has to reflect what the game's going to be. Otherwise, it's going to become Saturday afternoon. Wow. I didn't anticipate that.
What in your mind is the answer or some part of the answer to this? Because it sounds from the way you're talking and from the numbers, the way they seem to be stacking up, it feels kind of like a crisis.
No, I think it's manageable. I think it's just got to be some common sense. And things like, again, just things I've kind of looked at in the last two or three weeks. So I went to watch London Irish play against Northampton on Sunday. They backed up on the Friday night against Newcastle away. So they come off a game. Now that's taken their boys, trust me, 48 hours to recover from that game. They've then got to travel up to Newcastle and then play another game. Well, is that fair on them? I mean, that's not me. I'm not biased here. This is just an observation. So I watch them on the Sunday. I'm watching them on the TV in my front room on a Friday night. Is that common sense? I mean, for example, it takes, 6 days to turn around a HIA. So anybody HIA'd on a Sunday automatically can't play on the Friday night. Again, I just think maybe in some instances, maybe a bit of common sense could help us out in terms of how we manage the players. Could we somehow put a break in where players can rest and recuperate over a period of time? And again, the problem is when is that natural gap? Because there are competition, you jump from one competition to another competition, back into the league, into Europe, then it's Christmas, New Year, everybody wants to go and watch rugby and sport at Christmas and New Year, so you're not suddenly going to do that then. So when is it?
Of course, now we hear that they'd like the season extended. Now, whether that would involve some breaks or not for some players, it sounds like there wouldn't be strategic breaks, but there might be opportunities perhaps for players to be managed a little better. But that's the positive spin. The negative spin is, well, your season's 10 months long now, and if you're an international, it's 11.
Yeah.
So that leaves you 1 month, but then you haven't even started your pre-season. So what's your take on all that happening?
Headline acts are always going to cause sort of a stir one way or the other, aren't they? It's like, we'll have an extended season. Well, actually, you know, until you look at what the fundamentals of that mean. But the break stuff is important in terms of it's a mental recovery, Ali. It's not a physical one. These guys are used to going week to week to week. It's the mental taxation that the game brings. And I think it's not throwing a headline out, good, bad or indifferent. It's trying to understand what is the best thing for the players. Because the bottom line is you, me, supporters, everybody wants the best players playing, don't they? In the big games, in the best competitions, you want your best. You don't want to look and go, well, they're never going to win this because A, B, C, D and E aren't playing. That's not what we want.
What is the player feeling, Jamie, as to the trend of injuries? Is there a trend? I know it's early days of this season, but there do seem to be an awful lot of them. Yes, to many of the high profile players, perhaps, which is drawing a few more headlines. But in your mind, is this as attritional and more so than it's ever been right now?
It's a tough question to ask, and the golden answer is, why are there more injuries? Is it luck of the draw? Is it something to do with the laws? Is it the weight and size and the collisions in the sport now? One thing I have noticed, I think, over the first month is how many teams are just dumping and fanning in defence on the field. They're not committing many to the tackle area, which means there's less space to attack. And so, you know, that probably means there's more collisions, more two-man collisions, which is probably going to increase the risk of injury. So that's something which I've noticed, and certainly the refs reffing the game in favour of the attacking team. And it seems a bit afraid to poach now, aren't they? You know, the classic back row is really right in on the ball, that law that you've got to release. First, second, third phase, a lot of teams now are just hitting and fanning. So whether that's affected it, I don't know. It's very hard to quantify, isn't it, the reason why.
OK, so Ugo, obviously, it's been big news in the media, really. People have picked up on the fact that a lot of teams are suffering with a big number of injuries. And, yeah, 45% of the Harlequins squad, that's huge. Dai Young as well also saying he's got big injury issues. We know that a lot of A-League fixtures have been cancelled. Do you think this is just an anomaly, or do you think it's to do with the new laws, or a bit of both? Or?
I think it's a little bit of both. I guess we're 5 weeks into the season, so it would be clear we'll be in a far greater position to make a proper assessment of it, maybe halfway through the season, perhaps at the end of the season. But the laws have had a, you know, they have really affected perhaps some of these injuries. The ball's in play for a lot longer, you're going to get more collisions. You're making more tackles, and I guess if you're carrying more and making more tackles, the risk of getting injured then becomes that much greater. But also then, the snowball effect is that if you are having so many injuries and your squad's completely depleted, 45% is huge. You're then asking a lot of people to put in a lot of minutes. So where you might be able to make those substitutions at 50, 60 minutes, if you're down to your third choice in a tighter position, fly-half position, you may not have that confidence. So a person that maybe, so you look at Saracens that often rotate two in, one out, aren't able to do that. So you're asking a lot of people to put in a massive amount of work, and the league is that much more competitive. Every single point desperately matters this season. So games aren't being done by 60-odd minutes. You're having to go down to the wire. Everyone's having to pay that much more detail to it. And you actually talk to some of the players, pre-season's that much harder. So every department in the rugby department is the most important department. For S&C, when they get you, they're going to flog you. They're going to get you as robust, but being robust means you're going to have to work tirelessly hard. So these guys already come into the season perhaps slightly overworked. Then you're in a really tough competition. You're picking up injuries because the ball's in play for a little bit longer. So there's a little bit of a spiral effect.
I think that because squads are getting smaller, undoubtedly, wages are going up. Dai Young's complained about that. I would say that if some of the people are complaining have been responsible for the wages going up. You know, if you pay Kirtley Beale $750,000, and I think that the second marquee player in particular, but marquee players distort the market. So if you pay Kirtley Beale $750,000 and Mike Brown is the England physio, I don't know what Mike Brown's on, but let's say at the time he was on £200,000, he's going to be sitting there thinking, well, Kirtley Beale's not a £500,000 better player than me. So I don't want I don't expect as much as him to stay at Harlequins because I'm not one of the marquee players, but surely I deserve a bit more. Now, if you spread that across a squad, then if every player's asking, a squad of 40 is asking for 10 grand more next year, well, that's 400 grand. That's your marquee player that you can't afford to bring in. So I think the squad sizes have reduced. As a result, I think that does affect clubs' philosophy when they're recruiting. And people that have an injury record, clubs will say, I don't know if I can take the gamble on him, because there is a bit of correlation. If you've had one injury, you're more likely to get another injury down the line. So I think it will change that. But I also think that there's a delayed supply and demand thing in rugby recruitment. And teams will realise they need bigger squads. And they will sacrifice having some of the quality to make sure that they can cover with enough bodies on. Yes, you can bring in other players for injury dispensation during the season. But I think we will see squads start to grow again, and the players' individual wages, maybe not the top guys, but some of the other guys will feel a bit left out. But that will settle amongst the 12 teams because they'll all realise they need slightly bigger squads.
I completely agree with your point on Wasps in terms of the amount of money they're having to pay. But then some of the Wasps' problems actually when they repositioned to Coventry, and I feel that. And when they repositioned, they lost their academy. And every player relies not just on bringing in quality marquee players, but actually developing academy players. So you can imagine someone like Jack Knoll at Exeter, who was probably on about 40, 50 grand and then playing every single game in a season. That's great value. But Wasps, you look at their backline on a Saturday, they've pretty much bought in their whole team. I mean, Haskell's there. Joe Simpson's there, that's come from the academy. Christian Wade's there. But for the rest of these guys, and you know exactly how it is, to leave the club that you're at 3, 4, 5 years, however long it is, to move to another club, you need to be paid more money. And the moment you know Kirtley Bills and 750, well, they're a rich club, and I want some of that. Maybe not 750 grand, but if I'm a 100 grand player, perhaps I can get 120 out of you. And they're having to overpay not just their top players and marquee players, but everyone right across the board.
And that's why I think, obviously, the top stars are going to be wanted. But you get to a certain age, and obviously you want your contract to go up every year. So actually, one of the reasons we might see players' careers shorten is because they'll get to a certain point where the club player almost becomes too expensive, and they have to look for that bargain again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that the really clever clubs, it's not, or the clubs that find success, it's not necessarily based on their stars and their academy, but their ability to go out and find that guy that's not that highly rated, put him into your system and make him very highly rated. I think Exeter have done that over the past. You know, you look at sort of, you know, traditionally, all the teams that have had long-term success, they've all been pretty good at finding people maybe in the Championship or not wanted by another academy and then turning them into stars. And Wasps, you know, Joe Launchbury was one of those.
Rejected
Quins. You know, the whole thing, you know, Leicester have signed Nick Maloof this year. They took a huge punt on him. Did they take a huge punt on him? He took a bit of a punt as well because he wasn't going to have that value of a international class winner because he'd only ever played sevens.
Yep.
Leicester took a chance. He's actually been one of the most consistent players. He's played every week. And, you know, he's not going to be on the same money as a Manu Tuilagi or something. So it's people like that that you can almost surprise some of the fans and the other teams with their performance that are the ones that are going to win you the tournament because your stars are not going to be fit every single week. Right, we've heard from Wasps. Now let's listen to the best bits of Saracens' Jamie George and Alex Sanderson.
Like we would any other big game, you know, it's we never look too far ahead in the old cliché stand true with us. It's game by game. But Wasps, they beat us back end of last season, obviously got to the final. So we've got some points to prove in terms of setting the record straight, we feel. There's two different sides at play as well, isn't there? Wasps who love to attack and love to pass and love to run, and we like doing the same, but we also love smashing people in defence. So I guess it's going to be their kind of Galactico attacking back line versus this Wolfpack defence. That's how I'm building it up in today's meeting anyway. They've been missing some key personnel, like Willie LaRue, Cipriani's out for a while, and Robson, Hughes, who went off with a dead leg. All these guys we expect to be back, barring Cipriani this weekend, so they should be back to their full attacking strength.
They haven't been in the best of form and they've got a few injuries, but they're still a fantastic squad. You know, they'll be disappointed with how they performed last week. You know, we've done our analysis on how they played, and you know, it wasn't a typical Wasp performance, so we're expecting them to come back and really try and put on a performance. And you know, for us, it's back at Allianz Park. We put in a good performance there against Sale, so we want to make sure that we keep continuing to progress. You know, we haven't quite hit our straps yet so far this season. We've still got a lot to work on, so we're hoping to put that out on the field on Sunday. We've got a lot of respect for the way that they attack. They've got a lot of good options, a lot of good players. You look at their back line, they're just full of superstars. So, you know, but with our defence, we back our defence all the time. And we're trying to constantly evolve and take it to new levels. And, you know, we haven't quite got there so far this season. So we know that we need to be right on it if we're going to get a result off the back of Sunday. You know, I think there is always a different edge around the training week when it's European week because they know the importance of it. It's effectively knockout rugby from word go, so it's going to be big for us. You know, you watch this session next week, there's going to be an added edge to it, I guess. But that's what you need. You need that extra competitiveness in order for us to be on our game, and you know, it's going to be a huge game against Northampton next week. Third win, yeah, it would mean everything. You know, we're not looking too far ahead at that. You know, we've got a seriously tough group to get out of first, and starts with Northampton away, which is a huge start in Europe. So, you know, a big rival of ours, and we're really looking forward to that challenge. And if we can progress from that into Ospreys and so on, it's going to be a tough one. From experience, you know, obviously Claremont are in our group this year, and going away to Claremont has always been very tough. You look at, you know, not many. I think they went on an unbeaten run there for a long time at home, and it's a seriously tough place to go and play. But So that's always something that we get really excited about, going to hostile environments where, you know, we're up against it, against the team and the crowd. And those are stuff that we, you know, we relish, and you know, those are the games you definitely look forward to.
Slightly weird for Saracens this year, and not from what they're doing on the pitch, but I guess all the chat, or the lack of chat about them. Double European champions, only lost one game against Bath away, which is far from a disgrace. But there hasn't really been much chat about them at all. I mean, I guess they'll be thrilled about that, no?
Yeah, I think they'll love it. Yeah. I think they'll absolutely love it. I think they, maybe we're not talking about them as much because some of the other teams are, or lots of teams are performing well, you know, different teams as well, Newcastle. Maybe it's because Exeter did what people might have thought was impossible at the beginning of last year by beating them in a final. But maybe it's just we've got used to that level of performance and they're going about their business. They're not setting the world on fire, but they're getting the results they need to. They don't need to peak yet. They need to peak at the end of the season. They're not doing anything wrong. So they'll be delighted. You know, again, sort of harping back to the good old days and when Leicester, every year, you know, the likes of Stuart Barnes used to write Leicester off and say, oh, yeah, this Leicester team's over the hill now. And I remember sitting in that environment saying, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And you got that impression. And you might lose a couple of games. Oh, they're done. They're, and we knew we could come back. And I don't think Saracens are at that. I don't think anyone's writing them off yet. I think everyone expects them to be right up there, if not winning the Premiership, then being right at the top, competing in the final. But it's just starting. People are getting used to what they're doing, and maybe a bit of the myth has gone, but I think that'll suit them down to the ground.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're very comfortable seeing them win, and that's why we don't have to talk about them all the time, because it's old Saracens won again. Standard, it's a little bit boring. I think with the European Champions Cup just on the horizon, when we get to travel Europe and see them against some of the best teams in Europe, I think that's when they'll start hitting the back pages once again. I think that's when, you know, they'll feel at the peak of their confidence. But they're playing well and they've got their injuries and you wouldn't know it. No one's talking about that either. But they seem to always be able to... Hey, you just look at their second row berth.
Yeah.
Marrow with Nick Ezekwe, Will Skelton.
Yeah.
George Cruz, their strength and depth right across the
and
board.
Jim,
in every...
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? When you lose players that are important to the squad, not just to the team and the performance on the field, but their identity. You know, players like Jim Hamilton, and you don't miss a beat. Kelly Brown, you don't miss a beat. And that's where you know you've created the right sort of environment that you can keep churning out quality and they're still the team that everyone wants to beat, and they will be the team. Funnily enough, actually, I think, you know, Leicester's win against Exeter maybe just dents Exeter's. I think people were starting to feel that about Exeter, that they can go anywhere and beat anyone, and that will have dented them. I'm sure they'll come back strong from it. But Saracens, you just wouldn't fancy.
No.
Any team would say, couldn't hand on heart say, yeah, we're definitely going to beat Saracens at our place.
Yeah.
Right, Ugo met up with his best mate, Danny Kerr, to talk about life as a parent and a little bit about rugby too, featuring some very special and very young guests who you might hear in the background.
Sadiq, mate, being a father, having a family, settled life, I mean, how do you think that's affected your game? How's it changed it?
I think the biggest thing for me, it puts everything in perspective. You know, you go to train, you have a bad day, or you lose a game, you come home and he doesn't care if you win or lose, he just wants a cuddle from his dad. And it's puts everything in perspective. It makes it more of a purpose of why you want to go out there and make people proud. And
that's it, mate. You scored the first ever try in European Champions Cup history. Do you know that?
I did know that, yeah.
Against
we played the
Cast.
First game, didn't we, Cast, yeah.
I watched that game on TV. Do you remember how you celebrated? A little point to Jodie. So that was a real special week for you because you had a baby, scored the first ever try. What were your memories from that day?
Yeah, obviously, Friday night game. We weren't really aware of the time of his first try, but then afterwards someone said, oh, you know, that's the first try in European Champions Cup history. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I think I was offside, to be honest. So I got away with it, but no, it's pretty special. And obviously, Blake had just been born, and pretty special moment.
Mate, you've adopted another baby this year, a little bit older than Blake. He's 18, and he's playing outside of you, Marcus Smith. He's probably not as hard work as Blake, surely, but what's it like to play with him?
They've got similar tendencies, mate. they both shout a lot. He's been a breath of fresh air, mate. It's amazing to see an 18-year-old fresh out of school, just done his A-levels, and to play with the maturity that he has and the heart that he plays with. He takes the ball to the line, he gets belted, and people are running at him. He sticks his head in where it hurts, and he's a leader. I think the main thing with young tens, I've seen a lot of them, but for him, he dominates the game with his talk. And
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's a proper stick. Hang on, Blake, because Phoenix has been sick.
I'm gonna. Oh my gosh. I mean, where's that sick come from, like?
You couldn't script this, could you?
Oh my. We good. So unfortunately, Phoenix didn't want to take part in the second bit of this interview. I'm not sure whether it's our chat or whether she's camera shy, but no, she's just been weaned onto food, and there's the evidence of how much she enjoys my cooking. But anyway, off Phoenix and back to you, Daddy. So spoke a little bit about Quinns. Marcus Smith, you were just saying, just, you know, a great leader, playing some really good rugby. But let's move on to England. So you and Ben Youngs, you two really are the mainstays in that England team. I'm not sure how you feel about that, but I think since March 2013, you and Ben, there's only been three tests played without you and Ben Youngs in the England team.
Wow.
Does that surprise you?
Yeah, the amount of times I think I've been dropped. That does surprise me a bit. Now, obviously, me and Youngs, you've had a good rivalry for a good few years now. Blake, yeah, we've obviously had a good rivalry. It's a friendly rivalry between me and Youngsy. We get on really well, on and off the pitch, and him being so good makes me try even harder and know that, you know, we both want to play, and you obviously want to play as many times as you can and start as many games as you can, and it's obviously a great rivalry with him over the years, and hopefully we've got a few more years left.
So, Friday night. Massive game. So Harlequins haven't gone so well in the last couple of weeks. It's not do or die, but how important is this game for Harlequins?
Yeah, it's a huge game for us. We don't say we're desperate for a win, but we really could do with one. You know, we sat here after five games, lost three and only won two, and generally thinking that with a bit more accuracy from us and a bit of better play, we honestly could be sat here with five wins. And obviously going to Wasps was a great victory for us. We went to Northampton last week, a team that hadn't lost there for 10 months, and we came away very disappointed that we didn't take the 4 points. And you know, we're not far off where we want to be, but you know what it's like when things don't quite go your way. You maybe force it a little bit more. And you know, we're looking forward to Friday night. Sailor on a roll at the moment. They're playing some really good stuff. Just put 50 on Gloucester. We know they're going to come down full of confidence.
So yeah, a bit of a hectic interview there with Dad, as you can see. Lots of interruptions. I finally just recovered about it. But I guess, more importantly, let's talk about Harlequins. Been out of Europe for the last 3 years. They find themselves back in. Is it great timing for them to be back in, considering they haven't had a great start to the season? 45% of their their squad are depleted now to injury. Europe's not getting any easier, is it?
No, it's not. I think this weekend is important to them, the quality of the performance. What have they been like this year? Terrible first weekend. Put that down to rustiness. Actually came back really well from it. Looked very strong. The Leicester game that they lost, let's be honest, that could have gone either way, yeah, right up till the 80th minute. And if they win that, everyone's saying, oh, Harlequins look great. So we're just questioning them a little bit because it's that inconsistency and the ability to close out games and the injury thing. And yeah. I guess, and well, you'd know better than me, would John Kingston be the sort of manager that said, right, we 100% target every Saturday? Or what's his goal this year? To finish high up in the Premiership or to go a long way in Europe? Or is it just we've got to compete on all fronts?
It's a strange one, because if sport was played on paper, then Quinns would be there or thereabouts every single year. You know, their starting 15's as good as most, you know. Look at the likes of your Danny Cares, your Jamie Roberts, your Yards, your Visser, who's not even making the squad at the minute. Almost a Lions front row. Quality right throughout the team. Rob Shaw in the back row, Clifford. So they've got a quality team. It's been 5 years since they've won anything. And I think for every year that passes, that pressure, you know, just grows that much more. I think the fans are a little bit frustrated. Still living a little bit in the Conor O'Shea era, because that's the last time that was anything that was won. John Kinks has been there for a long time, a brilliant operator, very intelligent. And I reckon he's probably starting to feel a bit of the pressure as well. Last year was a bedding in period. He's now got a squad which really resembles a squad that he wants, and I like the makeup of it. But what would constitute a, you know, a decent return? And I think bare minimum, they have to be top four. Europe, start of the season, they'd have said quarterfinals. But where they are now, 5 weeks into season, with half a squad injured, I don't know. I really don't know. You know, we're talking about the most examining league in the world and one of the toughest competitions in the world back to back. And you're trying to straddle both competitions within a season with half your players missing. I don't know what's achievable. I don't know what they'd consider acceptable, but certainly in a bit of a spot. And I don't want to come across negative. You know, this is just the reality of their situation.
Yeah, it's hard for you. It is hard for you because, I mean, one of the things that maybe, do you think, I know they've brought Graham Rowntree in, you look at the coaching staff, and they've traditionally always been promoted from the ranks of player at Quinn. So they've never really seen other environments apart from maybe their international environment or if they've been at other clubs. And I don't know, I quite like that. I love the fact that a club keeps hold of their own and they make sure that one generation's passed to the next. But if you haven't had that success for a while, and you look at some of the clubs that have done it successfully, and let's take Saracens, they have promoted from within, but they brought Mark McCall in from the outside, and then they brought their coaches through with his way of doing things. Do you think maybe they just need a little bit of external sort of creativity or a different approach?
On one hand, it's great to see clubs looking after players when they've retired, and it's not a jobs for all, it's because they're good enough. But I do take your point. I think it's a real valid point that I guess Nick Evans and Nick Easter will only coach in a way in which they've always known as a player, both their 10-plus years. I think it would massively help Harlequins to have someone in, wherever it might be from, Southern Hemisphere, could be anywhere in Europe, who just looks at Quins at face value, use their experiences from the clubs or the unions that they've worked with and just added a bit of extra detail. I guess their outside influences, apart from their coaches, would just be their psychologist, who's, you know, dislocated from the rugby department. And he has quite a holistic, obviously, approach to how he sees it week by week. But from a hands-on playing department, they don't have that. John Kingston, Mark Mapletoff, Colin Osborne, Graham Rowntree now. I mean, I guess he's the only one who's slightly fresh, but the rest of them have been part of this Harlequins machine as a player or as a coach for their whole life. And sometimes you can be quite insular. I've certainly found that since retiring, it was everything Quins, you know, and doesn't matter what they're doing, we're doing it right. But now I've retired, it gives you quite a kaleidoscopical view as to the Premiership, and you can appreciate what Leicester are doing really well, or Saracens or Bath and this and that. And I think it's really important to have someone else come in just to open your horizons and perhaps challenge the way certain things work.
They're probably the funniest club in that it wouldn't surprise you to see them doing really well in the top four, but equally it wouldn't surprise you to see them something go wrong during the season and just start to get on one of those roles that we were talking about Wasps before, that they just start to struggle, they can't get out of it.
And I can't put my finger on it. I spoke to the players, and I don't think they can too. It's weird because, you know, I just mentioned some of the players there, and they're all quality players. Very good team. They're well coached. You know, like every team would confess to, well coached, we work really hard, blah, blah, blah. But whenever you see, and you've just pointed out there, you know, if Quins were to win the Premiership, so, well, you know, they've got a good squad. If they weren't to, if they're out of the top six, you're not overly surprised. You know, that Leicester game which they lost, you know, that was a big blow, and that's frustrating because every Premiership campaign's built on home form. But I didn't speak to anyone after that game. That was like, oh my gosh, what Quins? They lost and they were 10 points up with 30 to go. And I think that's probably the frustration, and that's that intangible thing which they've got to work out what it is and how to beat that out of their system to not be seen and certainly not be that inconsistent team.
Right, well, if you fancy yourself as a bit of a pundit, you can play along with a new BT Sport Predictor game for free, where you can guess the scores from each weekend's Aviva Premiership matches. For more details and full terms and conditions, go to btsport.com/predictor. Right, let's do a bit of our pre-prep for our predictions this week.
Okay.
Friday night, we've just been talking about them. Harlequins at home to Sale, 7 p.m, BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD. How do you see this one panning out?
I can only see a Harlequins victory. I really can. Sale were impressive at the weekend. They were very good. The most amount of points they've scored in over a decade.
Yeah.
But I've gone through the video because I wanted to know how they scored their tries and was it good defence, good attack? It was a bit of a mixture of both. Gloucester will be absolutely disappointed in how they attacked. Gifted three intercept tries. Really poor, really sloppy. Harlequins will be hurting. They had opportunities to win up at Northampton, a tough place to go. It's so important. It's not critical, but I think you're getting as near as critical as you can get. But to come back home and to pick up a loss would be massive. I think they'll be, despite Carl Sinclair and all those kind of sideshows they've had this week, the injuries, I can see them putting together a really good performance. I think Harlequins will win.
I agree with you on that one. I haven't seen enough from Sale to think that they can go away from home. But again, we wouldn't be surprised.
Your old team, London Irish, Leicester. Doesn't get any easier than for Irish, does it?
Well, it doesn't. Totally different atmosphere at Oval Park training ground this week because of the win against Exeter. That was massive. I think it would have dented them enormously if they'd lost at home. They didn't beat any of the top three teams last year at all, Leicester. So it was vital for setting their stall out. Disappointing start to the season. They feel they're back on track and they feel that London Irish is an opportunity. They're not taking it lightly, obviously, because you're a fool to do that in the Premiership, but they think that they can go down and back up that performance. Now, London Irish, you get the impression for me that it's that confidence thing. For good first 20 minutes, get themselves back into it, but they will have in the back of their mind that question mark that are we good enough to play at this level? We had a brilliant first weekend, but since then we've looked outclassed.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only game where London Irish have done well was against Harlequins, and that's because they were in the game for 80 minutes. Every other game, so the four rounds after that, they've just not been in the game for long enough. They started so poorly. We saw it. We were doing that game at Newcastle. So, and also from a Leicester point of view, I think emotionally, psychologically, after such a big result at home, I think the best place to go is away. Because you're not relying on the crowd.
Yeah.
You're not relying on the fact that the ref may give you that 50-50. You're going away. Let's face it, the Majeski is not going to be 25,000 people there. The ref might not be on your side. So it's just you and the 14 other guys on the pitch that have to do the job. It always narrows your focus that much more when you go away from home. For London Irish, they've got to start well. Because if they stay in the game, they've got enough character, they've got enough heart. We know they're always good in the last 20, but that's often because they've been forced to chase the game. But I do feel this game should be comfortable for Leicester.
I think Leicester will win it. The one thing that London Irish need to do for me is they need to build to have the right to use their star players. At the moment, they're just trying to get the ball to Lewington and everyone just drifts across with the loopy pass. Or Marshall's trying to do everything on his own. Marshall needs to... He's got wonderful talent. He's a great break player, but he needs a bit of game control. If they do that, they've got an opportunity. Right, that's our BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD game, 2:30 on Saturday. If we run through the games that aren't televised on Saturday, quick fire answers. Bath v Worcester, Hugo?
Bath.
Exeter versus Newcastle?
Exeter reaction, yeah.
Yeah, Gloucester versus Northampton. Gloucester need that win, don't they?
I'm going to say Northampton, but that's not locked in on the app.
I haven't locked it in. That's one thing, actually. You've got to check the teams because with these injuries, it makes a significant difference. So I agree with you on that, all those. Right, the big game, Sunday, Allianz Park, 2:30 p.m, BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD, Saracens against Wasps. Are you going to be brave and bet against Saracens?
I'm not. Every weekend, what we've seen is one anomaly right throughout the fixture list. There's always been that one game which you just wouldn't have called. I haven't got 6 out of 6 this season at all. I'm happy to admit that. I don't think this game's going to be that one anomaly. I just don't see it being that. It could potentially be one of the others. I don't think it's going to be Worcester Bath. But Saracens have been strong. They look very good. They've got a pretty fit squad. And at home, they don't really lose many games there. Wasps, you know, their season's going from pretty average to worse. And I can't imagine that they're going to get much comfort at Allianz Park.
I think I've got to agree with you on that one, which is very boring. But there we go. But obviously, as I said, you can all see what we actually go for. btsport.com/predictor. And you can play along too. Right, thanks for listening to the Rugby Tonight podcast. Make sure you listen again next week when we'll be joined by Brian O'Driscoll.
And remember to subscribe to the pod so it's delivered straight away to your device every Thursday. Hope you've enjoyed listening. Please give us a 5-star rating and positive review on iTunes. See you for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.